Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our Reedley City Council meeting for Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. I'm going to call the meeting to order, and our invocation tonight will be by Horatio Aleman, Cruising for Jesus, and the Pledge of Allegiance will be led by Council Member Mary Fass. Please stand.
Let's pray. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. We thank you for the city of Reedley and for the council and for everyone that's in here and who has a part in keeping our cities clean. We thank you in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Please join our council in the flag salute. Attention, salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Could we have the roll call, please?
Councilmember Byers.
Here.
Councilmember Fowle.
Here.
Councilmember Friesen.
Here.
Councilmember Tuttle.
Here.
Mayor Bettencourt.
Here. Agenda approval. Are there any additions or deletions to the agenda this evening?
There are none from staff, Mayor.
Okay. Do I have a motion to approve?
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
Councilmember Byers.
Yes.
Councilmember Friesen.
Yes.
Councilmember Fath.
Yes.
Councilmember Tuttle.
Yes.
Mayor Bettencourt.
Yes. Public comment provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the City Council on items of interest to the public within the Council's jurisdiction and which are not already on the agenda this evening. It is the policy of the Council not to answer questions impromptu. Concerns or complaints will be referred to the City Manager's office. Speakers should limit their concerns to not more than 3 minutes. No more than 10 minutes per issue will be allowed. For items which are on the agenda this evening, members of the public will be provided an opportunity to address the council as each item is brought up for discussion. So is there any public comment this evening? None. So we'll move on to consent agenda. Consent agenda items are considered routine and a recommended action for each item is included and will be voted upon as one item. If a council member has questions, requests additional information, or wishes to comment on an item, the vote should not be taken until after questions have been addressed or comments made, and the public has had an opportunity to comment on the consent agenda items. If a council member wishes to have an item considered individually or change the recommended action, then that item should be removed and acted upon as a separate item. A council member's vote in favor of the consent agenda is considered and recorded as a separate affirmative vote in favor of each action listed. For adoption of ordinances, only those that have received a unanimous vote upon introduction are considered consent items. Are there any items that the council wishes to comment on?
I'd like to remove 3, 5, and 6, please.
Are there any items the public wishes to comment on? Okay. Number 3, approve and authorize city manager to sign the memorandum of understanding between the County of Fresno and the City of Reedley regarding authorization for the county to enforce Fresno County infectious material ordinances within the City of Reedley's jurisdiction.
And I'll go ahead and take that for you if there are questions, Mayor and Council.
I don't have any questions, just a comment about we had a meeting with Jim Costa this morning to do a press release about him putting forward a bill to help resolve some of the federal side of this infectious disease and ordinances and when it comes to labs. And I'm just glad that the county is willing to step forward and organized to help support us basically in their putting forth information about ordinances and I'm glad we can be a part of that.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
And then on to item 5, I'm just so excited to see that we're going to actually do some more work out there. There's a lot of empty fields or open space. And so just as a double check on the construction and the where the dollars are coming from, we had some funding in this last year's budget, right? That is going forward to help with this project?
Correct. We had some general fund dollars. We had some funding from the state. And then I'm putting in a little Measure C and Parks and Rec. Yes.
Okay.
But yes, there was existing already allocated. So there, this is only the difference, mm-hmm. but the total amount I think is like 4.3. Yeah. Or 3.2. Yeah. Sorry. Yes. 8.2, not 4.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're correct. In last year's budget, we allocated $2 million in general fund dollars. And so that's why if any member of the public would like to know the specifics, it is delineated in the staff report, but for the sake of what a budget resolution does, we needed to reallocate $1.28 million. Mm-hmm. That's not the cost of the project, but it is all in the staff report for the public.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then that's all I had on that one. Thank you, Mary Lou. And then on item 6, I met actually with Paul this yesterday. And one of the questions I have, and probably the chief of police can maybe answer this. I don't know. on page 19 of this report, the master fee schedule has a marijuana cultivation permit. And when we initially voted on this, I voted no. And my reason is because I don't think anybody would ever apply for this. And my question is, has anybody ever applied for this?
No.
Okay.
Now, yeah. If I can just say, Councilwoman, is that no one has applied for it doesn't mean people don't have them, that we've actually had to shut some of them down because they are not permitted.
I believe that part, but yeah. Okay, that's all I needed to point out.
Okay, if there's no comments from the rest of the council, do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve.
I'll second.
Councilmember Fass?
Yes.
Councilmember Friesen?
Yes.
Councilmember Byers?
Yes.
Councilmember Tuttle?
Yes.
Mayor Bettencourt?
Yes. The workshop tonight is Community Development Director Ronnie Horton. It's on a zoning code update, and there will be no action on it. It's just a report workshop.
Okay.
All right. Good evening, Madam Mayor and members of the council. Rodney Horton with the Community Development Department. I'm joined today with Ellen Moore, our city planner. And so for the past 2 years, we've really been working on our, you know, draft zoning ordinance as well as our subdivision ordinance regulations. The purpose of the update really is to be compliant with the numerous housing laws that have been approved by the California legislature, probably over the course of the last 5 years. And also to get current on different economic development initiatives of the council, regulations on items that are of concern to the council, like smoke shops and research and development labs, that type of thing. We have two urgency ordinances that are still in place in regards to smoke shops and research and development labs. And so those regulations have been included in a draft. Ordinances. Both ordinances are currently in the city attorney's review. I think we just got one back earlier this evening. We're going to be waiting on the other one. And then once we have that ready to go, it'll go to Planning Commission for review and recommendation, and then it will make its way to the City Council. So we're pretty happy to finally see these projects that have kind of sat in our shop for the last couple of years start to kind of march out and make its way to the to the council. And so I just wanted to kind of showcase where we have been and then show where we're currently at and what the next steps are. So this project kicked off in January of 2022 before my arrival. This was something that my predecessor worked on as far as acquiring the grants for this project. And then kicking off the search for a consultant team and the selection of that consultant team, which is Mentir Harnish. So everything initially started with a review of existing conditions, looking at the current and existing trends in regards to our ordinance and the administration of our ordinances, both zoning and subdivision. Then we looked at project management and coordination with that consultant team on a week, about a biweekly basis, where we kind of had regular ongoing calls and management team meetings to discuss next steps, certain issues within the ordinance that required us to kind of flesh things out a bit. So we continued that throughout the duration of the project. And then, of course, we had our kickoff meeting, and then there was also a joint meeting with the council and a commission early on. In the midst of this process, there was also the approval of an urgency ordinance for the smoke shops, and then we later came back to you for an urgency ordinance on the research and development labs. During this process, we've had public engagement, which included stakeholder interviews. We have done our best to keep them apprised of what has been happening with the process along the way and soliciting their input on what they would like to see in the zoning code. And that stakeholders included business owners, residents, you know, individuals that have a heavy reliance on our zoning code, the people that we tend to see at our public facing counter. It also included a couple of workshops before the council and commission as well. And our consultant team put together a community newsletter, which was advertised in a newspaper and also has been included at both of our public facing counters, as well as the public library. So we are at the step where the ordinances were drafted by our consultant team with staff input based off of the feedback we received from the stakeholders. And the next step is the step that we're currently on is the public review draft, which has been provided, is placed on the city's website at readly.ca.gov. We are working on the CEQA compliance, and then the very next thing that we're going to be working on is adoption before the council. Just prior to that, we'll be at Planning Commission for a recommendation. So we're currently at steps 6 and 7. And again, I had mentioned both ordinances are going to be reviewed by the city attorney's office. We got one of those ordinances back, the subdivision ordinance. And so we're waiting on the zoning ordinance before we schedule a hearing before Planning Commission. So that's basically, you know, this slide kind of regurgitates exactly what I had mentioned earlier. But this is basically what we have completed. And going through our ordinance, we looked at every sentence, every line, and we created a pretty exhaustive fix-it list. We just really hammered down in our conference room, and for about 5 or 6 hours, a couple of days a week, just really went through all of the different components of the current zoning code that we know needs to be refined and tweaked. I will say this, the story of our zoning code update is essentially we want to be able to get to yes faster. The current ordinance, it's a common criticism that we hear, is a bit too restrictive. We have a lot of entitlement applications that's making its way to commission and to council that we feel as though we could handle, we have the capability and the capacity to handle at the staff level. So it's all about being able to get to yes faster. That we believe makes Readly a business-friendly community. And so that's the crux of it. And you know, that was the comments that we heard from the different stakeholders, was that far too many projects go to planning commission that could be handled by city staff. That's costly. For many of our applicants, time is money. So we have to meet certain requirements when it comes to having a hearing before commission and council. So the goal is to really try to implement the vision of the community and the council at the staff level, and not have as many projects have to make its way to commission and council. So some of the other things that we did besides looking at the housing component is we looked at cleaning up some of the languages. I think I mentioned this to you before, a small petty one, but it's one that needs to be cleaned up is, our existing language says variances are heard by the Board of Zoning Adjustment. The city doesn't have that. It would be the Planning Commission is who would hear a variance application. And obviously, commission's determination on a variance application is then appealable to the city council. The council serves almost like a Supreme Court. They're the final say on land use matters here in the city. The next step above the council, obviously, would be the courts, and that's a very costly, timely process. So there's some definitions we need to clean up to be compliant with our LUPA, which is the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act of 2000. And this basically requires all governments to treat houses of worship in the same light as it would treat non-religious assemblies. So we did our level best to be compliant with that, clean up some language when it comes to large family daycare that we currently require in our existing code, but quite frankly is not not required and is basically restricted by the state for us to require to charge for a business license, to require a CUP, to have any kind of locational requirements. All of the licensure would be through the state of California. we're proposing to allow for more by right uses as opposed to uses that require a hearing before commission and council, like a conditional use permit application for a car wash as an example. In the current ordinance, we do not expressly allow for a director's determination on, a particular situation that could arise when there is a gray area in the zoning ordinance. We have sort of had to really be creative at working with our public when it comes to issues that may arise. So in the draft ordinance, there is an appealable director's determination that would be allowed. So any determination a director makes would be appealable to the Planning Commission. Any action a Planning Commission takes would be appealable to the City Council. When it comes to our entitlement applications, currently period of time before that approval expires is 1 year. We're requesting to move that up to 2 years. Particularly when you deal with an issue like an ABC CUP or a CUP that involves alcohol. Well, that may take some time to go through ABC's process before you're allowed to actually start operating. Then you have to go through the building department if you're making any kind of improvements to the building. And so there goes your year. I know the common retort could be, well, then just ask for an additional year of time, but then you're at the you're beholden to the body you just asked the approval to then ask for an extension. So we just think that it makes sense to just move the expiration of entitlement approvals from 1 year to 2 years. We're going to incorporate the city standards into the subdivision ordinance regulations, and we have provided for regulations on locational requirements for smoke shops. One of the other things that we included when dealing with smoke shop and tobacco stores They will be limited to the light industrial zone district. They'll have to be 1,000 feet away from any other establishment. They'll have to be about 1,000 feet away from any other sensitive use. And a sensitive use is defined as a religious institution, a school, regularly established boys and girls club, or public building that's frequented by children, public park, public trail, or public building, and then within 600 feet of a residential zone. And prior to submitting a CUP application, the applicant will have to have a neighborhood meeting. So, and a neighborhood meeting has to be, an invite has to be extended to all business owners, property owners, and tenants within 2,000 feet of the proposed business. So before they even come and deal with city staff, they need to be able to have a discussion with the neighborhood prior to coming to us. So that's just some of the regulations on smoke shops that we have included in a draft ordinance there. And then we look at changing the dwelling units per acre ratio to maintain consistency with the general plan. And then, as I had mentioned in a previous workshop, changing the designation of multifamily or single family to multi-unit versus and single unit to focus on the actual structure as opposed to the types of people who would be living inside of the structure. The other thing that we are going to be recommending in a proposed change is expediting the home occupation permit process. Typically what happens now, someone comes to our counter and says, you know, I have a business that I want to do outside of my house, or I have a lawn care business and I'm only going to be using the home to store my equipment and do my paperwork and taxes, et cetera. Well, currently what we have to do is collect $200 from them. They have to complete a home occupation permit application. We have to notice the neighbors, wait for a period of time to expire before we can issue the home occupation permit. What we are going to do is we want to expedite that process to approve them through what we call a zone clearance. So we'll look at the regulations of the zoning ordinance, you know, make sure that they comply with those regulations. And if they do, we'll be able to issue that over the counter. They'll get a copy of those regulations, so they have that with them on record. And then once they get their zone clearance approved and their home occupation permit is in hand, then they'll go right around the other side of City Hall and apply for a business license. So we want to really expedite that process. We respect and understand that a lot of businesses that eventually grow and become, you know, the backbone of a community all start in a garage and in a bedroom on someone's kitchen table or dining room table. So we don't want to hinder that. We want to encourage it, and we feel like we can encourage it, by expediting the process. When we look at regulations for research and development uses, there again, they can't even talk to city staff until they first have a neighborhood meeting. At this neighborhood meeting, they have to, and it's considered a pre-application meeting, they have to make sure that an invite is extended to KCUSD, Alta Irrigation District, Fresno County Department of Public Health, community development, the fire department, and police departments at the same neighborhood meeting. It has to include owners and tenants of real property that are within 2,500 feet of the affected property. And only what is allowed is research and development activities that require a biosafety level of 1 through 3. 2 through 3 is what is heavily regulated, and BSL level 4 is not allowed. To give you an example, a 1 is just a low risk. There's no significant threat to the public. A two would carry things like HIV and a staph infection. Three would include something along the lines of like yellow fever. And then four, you're talking Ebola. So just to give you an idea, level four would not be allowed in the city at all. Levels one through three would only be allowed, and that would only be allowed through a conditional use permit application. It's limited to the industrial zone district, particularly the heavy industrial zone district. So you have to have, they'd have to have a pre-application meeting. They'd have to have regular neighborhood meetings. It would be a pretty extensive process to go through before they would be allowed to operate in the city. There's also locational requirements that go along with that as well. Locational requirements would be 2,500 feet from any flood fringe and our floodway areas, 2,500 feet from the Kings River, 2,500 feet from Traver Creek, and then 2,500 feet from any sensitive use, the same sensitive uses that I had mentioned earlier, places where the public quite commonly frequent, like a park, a school, library, et cetera.
R&D uses, more or less, how many do we have right now that would fall in that?
Let's see, Quest Diagnostics would not fall. Oh, that's right, they're CLIA exempt, sorry. I'm trying to think, maybe some of our ag uses, maybe?
Ag would be level one, so anything dealing with
and we're talking 2 to 3
fruit genetics or something. 2 to 3, we don't have any.
Two to three, we don't have any at this time.
So far.
And frankly, what was run today through the press conference would establish a federal standard and a federal national lab registry, which could really change everything, could really help everything. So right now, we don't think we have any two.
I don't see anything coming, but running down that list of required entities to invite, I would like the city council to be on there, or at least maybe the mayor.
Oh yeah, good. Well,
the reason we looked into that is just a little sticky, because if there's ever an appeal, it comes up to the city council, and I didn't want to get any council member in a situation where you would have to recuse yourself.
Okay, good.
And then, since we're still talking, on the home occupation, the to streamline the process, does that take out the requirement to notify the neighbors?
Yes.
Okay.
It takes out that requirement?
Yes.
Really?
It would. So for us to expedite, it would allow for us to not have to notify the neighbors, and we would be able to charge a much lower fee to have the application processed by staff. Currently, the fee is $200, and we proposed in the changes to the master fee schedule that the zone clearance fee be roughly $27.
Previously, and I'm talking decades ago, this was really important when you wanted somebody wanted to have a home daycare or something like that. You would notify the neighbors because you'd have people picking up, dropping off, things like that. You'd have kids. That process has been completely taken out of cities' hands by the state. It is completely controlled by the state.
Okay.
And so what you end up with is we review for things like any chemicals they're going to be storing. That moves it off to a different process again. And so what you're left with are people who are, you know, maybe they're home web designers or such. And so their neighbors really aren't impacted in any way, shape, or form. Okay. And what we have run into just a couple times, not too frequently, but just a couple times is, you know, neighbor conflicts. And then all of a sudden we're sharing out to the entire neighborhood what's happening with one neighbor, and then the neighbor conflicts get escalated. It gets a little odd. So over time, as technology has shifted and as other items within our zoning code have gotten stronger, the home occupation permit process has been less important. And I really appreciate the work that Ellen, Laura, and Rodney have done on this to really take a look and analyze what it costs us. So the city of Selma just did a big article that they're looking at a really expensive new home occupation permit process. We've kind of taken the exact opposite approach to say,
We don't need to be charging all this money because really it's a simple process for us. So,
okay.
So we're looking at a variety of housing options in the single unit residential zone districts. And I would even say in our multi-unit residential zone districts to include townhomes, which is a project that recently worked its way up to the council for a general plan amendment rezone application. In the planning world, we call that our missing middle. It's the kind of housing that you don't really see a lot of. You either see apartments or single unit homes. And so there's that middle, the townhomes, cottages, et cetera. So we allow for a variety of housing options within the single unit residential zone districts. And we're looking at reducing the parking requirements. Quite frankly, I feel like we're kind of overparked when we look at parking requirements. We have a lot of applications in order that are coming across the counter. And in order for it to pencil out, they're all asking for a reduction of parking fees from 3.5 spaces per dwelling unit to about 2 spaces per dwelling unit. We feel like 2 spaces per dwelling unit is adequate for both the multi-unit and single unit.
Is that something that's being pushed by the state also? I believe
it is, and it's getting to a point where the I could foresee for affordable housing projects parking requirements being totally taken off the table the way things are going.
Transit.
Yeah. Well, the problem is though, I own a house in a neighborhood where there's mostly apartments around it. And when I go there to work and the renters are there and they have parked in the driveway, there's no place to park. So I have to have them put a thing out like the night before so that nobody parks there so we can park a working truck where we're going to work. And if you go there at night, there is no parking for blocks because of the apartment units. And those are older apartment units that had a lot of parking, I believe. But people own a lot of vehicles around here. You know, it's different in the city because they have access to more mass transit quickly. Whereas here, it's not the case. One of my pet peeves, you know that. Yeah. Anyway.
And then next I'm going to turn it over to Ellen Moore to discuss ADUs and JADUs.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. Ellen Moore, City Planner with the Community Development Department. I would say that of all of the many state housing laws that have come across our desks, ADUs is kind of the most popular at this point. And what I mean by that is before 2018, when there were quite a few changes in legislation, kind of when they started, we had one application in about 5 years. And every year it seems like there's more. For example, last year we got 5 applications for ADUs. And from January 1 to today, we've had 5. So we are now at where however many we had last year in total for the entire year. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of, you know, it's still 5. It's still kind of low and probably not as many as the state wants to see, but it is something that is kind of becoming a more popular option for homeowners, whether they're going to rent out the ADUs because ADUs, which stands for accessory dwelling units, they are size restricted, living, sleeping, sanitation. It's like its own separate unit that people can rent out or they can have family members there, but it's on the same property as a primary dwelling unit. And so that's kind of the idea that, if someone owns the property outright and they are able to afford the investment of building another ADU on the property, it is becoming more popular. So that's why I wanted to kind of focus on that and some of the proposed changes required by law. So the left-hand column is the existing language that's in our code, which we cannot legally enforce anymore. The ADU legislation, it's almost kind of effective immediately as soon as it passes. So just as, so you're aware, the right-hand column items are going to be in the zoning code update, but they are also what we are enforcing now or what we are requiring now, because that's what the state is telling us to do. So the original language in our code talks about an owner occupancy requirement, which is a covenant that's recorded on the property. So any current owner, homeowners and future homeowners have to live in either the main house or the primary dwelling unit or the accessory dwelling unit. So the state no longer we can no longer require that according to the state. So somebody could technically turn it into an investment property, have a primary unit and an accessory dwelling unit on one lot, and they can rent both of them out. Yes.
So I have a question. So this is on like a single house property, is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, they state law does also allow it on multifamily properties as well. Yeah, single and multifamily. They still.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, the state law has actually identified, there's, I don't know, maybe five categories of ADUs right now. It's a lot where, you know, if it's one house, you can add one. If it's an apartment complex that has like a laundry room or something, they can actually convert that laundry room into maybe one unit, depending on the size of it. But that's kind of how the ADU law works now. Yeah. Every year they're kind of adding something to it.
And that's removed from us. That's state law, correct?
That's correct.
We're just following their orders.
Yeah. Yeah. And as far as kind of converting or, you know, ADUs on multifamily lots, I haven't seen an application for that yet. It is primarily on the single family zoned lots where there's quite a bit of backyard space too. That's kind of the ideal situation for these. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're seeing mostly. We're also seeing garage conversions, which is kind of the third bullet down on the right, is that if someone does a garage conversion, speaking of parking, we cannot require replacement parking for a garage conversion. And then as far as parking, we also cannot require more for a new construction ADU. We cannot require more than one space for that ADU. And it doesn't have to be covered as well. We are also limited in the side and rear yard setbacks that we can require. That is, it was going down from 5, which is what we require for any structure in a side and rear yard. Currently, rear yard is 10 feet in most cases. But for ADUs, they can be 4 feet away from the side yard, 4 feet away from the rear yard. In other words, 4 feet away from fences.
You have a house 8 feet from each other.
If you convert an existing garage that's right on the property line, you are allowed to do that as well. If you convert it to an ADU, we can't make them move it, but they do have to fire rate it if it's on a property line.
No, I had a conversation with my sister-in-law who had said, and I can't remember now where it came from, but you might recognize it, that they had at one time, I don't know if it was Reedley or maybe it was Clovis, because Clovis is moving pretty quickly on this, but they were going to have ADUs that faced the alleyways. Is that happening here? It is, okay.
Yeah, the ADUs. If you're off of an alley, we have seen a couple that are.
But they face the alleyway. Mm-hmm, they're not facing the other property. Mm-hmm. Okay,
that's correct. Yeah,
Do we have any in that are already?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. ADUs kind of, they have kind of been around and especially if there have been conversions and things like that. Yeah. And Clovis, it's the tiny home program, I want to say. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We were discussing that too. And Rodney and I were discussing it as well. Sounds like we might be able to get some ideas. I'm just hoping that we'll get some of their funding ideas too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I have a question. So is the mini home thing, is that what you're calling modular housing? Is that what they're talking about when it said a couple of slides back, what were the stakeholders wanting? They should allow modular housing. Is that the same thing or not?
No. Yeah, a manufactured or a modular house is kind of like a double wide or something mobile like home. That. Yeah, pretty much kind of like a mobile home. We still require a permanent foundation, though. So if someone wanted to use a tiny home, kind of what they're colloquially called, that are just on wheels, we don't allow those right now. They can be that small, they can be tiny, but they still have to be on a permanent foundation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and those plans are actually approved by HCD, so we kind of, we still review those, but it's not the same review as kind of building from the ground up, if you will.
Do you think all of this is going to help with the homeless problem that we have here?
No.
I was, you know, I was watching the news, and there, I don't remember if it was a large city in Texas was promoting themselves as being the answer to the homeless problem. And that was by providing the housing. And they said that they had been very successful, and they were offering their expertise to anybody who wanted to hear about it. But it was on the news today, and it sounded promising. I don't know if Texans have big egos. I was born in Texas, and I know. So, you know, let's put them to task, maybe, and see what they have. You know, what's working so well. You know, would you be willing to reach out to them if I could find out who it was?
I don't want to get off topic into homeless too much, so I'm going to ask the city attorney to catch me on the shoulder if I say something inappropriate.
Okay.
But our homeless population is interesting here in Reedley. So we do have folks who go around and once a week are really touching base with each of the homeless that we have. Yeah, and they are offered shelter every single week. And so I don't believe that would help our particular situation in Reedley, because at this time we've offered shelter every week to somebody. So we do, I know it defies logic for those of us who live in a regular situation, in a regular home, but we do have a lot of individuals on the street that is their preference to live on the street.
Okay, I won't get off on the homeless.
Yeah.
Another time.
So I just would worry about creating some housing that ultimately we spend some money on that doesn't do what we intended to do. That's probably for another topic that's agendized, I think. So.
Okay, good. Thanks.
So I did pretty much mention all of this, but ultimately, the last thing I will mention actually is there is something that's called a statewide exempt ADU. So an ADU that is up to 800 square feet, up to 16 feet tall with 4 foot and side yard, 4 foot side and rear yard setbacks. That is essentially something that we have to approve regardless. If it's more than that, there are certain requirements we will still ask for that are still pretty minimal according to the state. But just in case, because these may kind of become more popular, we are mostly seeing ADUs that are larger than 800 square feet. But this is also something that was approved, I believe, maybe 1 or 2 years ago that may kind of start coming up again as well. Mm-hmm. Or there may even be pre-approved plans for something like that, things of that nature. But ultimately, it does seem like ADUs are here to stay. And JADUs is a junior accessory dwelling unit, which is essentially even smaller than an ADU. And you can even share bathrooms with the current house. So that's interesting. We haven't seen any of those yet, but that will be interesting. Sorry to end on that note, but that's all that I had. Go ahead.
So can I ask a question? So you said the JADU, is that where like the kitchen and the bathroom facilities would be joint? Is that kind of what they're thinking?
Yes.
So it'd be basically like a bedroom and maybe a living area separate.
Yeah, that they could share kitchen or bathroom facilities. And those do have to be owner occupied.
Oh, those have to be owner occupied.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. Thank you.
I think some developers are making those already from the beginning. The new ones at the old Edo Packing off of Aspen, up there, one of their models basically had a built-in mother-in-law unit.
Like a mother-in-law, My kids had a place in Visalia that was built probably 15 years ago, and same thing. Me and the other mother-in-law on the other side, we were both claiming the, our spots at some point. Oh, but my kids since moved from there, so we're out now.
Yeah, that was all that I had in case anyone else has any questions. Otherwise, I'll turn it back.
That's interesting. Around. Very interesting.
I do have one more question.
Sure.
Back to the general plan, medium density and high density, the RM3 and the RM2.
Yes.
Have the 8 to 15 units, is that different from what we've had in the medium density in prior years, or it's the same?
It is, yeah. Those densities were adopted with the 2030 general plan, and the zoning code didn't really reference that. So the RM, the 2 and the 3 in the RM2 and RM3 was referring to something different. So it is a little bit easier to communicate with developers just to give them, just to say, oh, we're basically matching the general plan. General plan says medium density. The zone district is medium density. So you're at 8 to 15 units an acre.
Okay.
Yeah. So the density itself hasn't changed, but we're wanting to introduce it into the code.
Okay. I'm always keeping my eye out on that because, again, the state, you know, in the big cities, there's a lot of high density places, but it really doesn't fit in our area yet. So, in my opinion.
Yeah. I got one. Is minimum lot size, what's off the top of your head on zone, was there a change in the code?
There was a slight change in the code. Normally it is 6,000. We reduced it to 5,000. Yeah, so we didn't get too small. Developers still have the option to request smaller lot sizes, but that does become more discretionary. That would be something that would have to be approved by the Planning Commission to go smaller than 5,000.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And as Rodney approaches the podium again, I've seen you get up several times, Rodney. I do want to point out, so what is on my desk right now is Title 10 and Title 11. This is commonly known as the zoning code. This is actually a double-sided document, so it's very, very large. As you know from last meeting where we had the 1,500-page EIR, we don't necessarily want to kill a bunch of trees in giving you copies. You did receive today via email a link to Title 10 and Title 11 so that you can read through at your leisure. You did not need to read this entire document before tonight, but you may want to breeze through there to really delve into topics that are of interest to you personally. The sign ordinance, for instance, is in there, the smoke shops, the labs, etc. There are a lot of things in there. If you would like a paper copy, we're more than happy to give that to you. We did post that link for the public as well.
Good.
So the public can go through and give any comments that they'd like. Hopefully I didn't just steal your thunder, Rodney, with comments there.
No, that's all right. I can honestly say I didn't skip leg day. So that's it's up and down, up and down. I just, you know, city manager said it best there. So all I'm going to say is, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to be incorporating any revisions we get from the city attorney into the text, and then we're going to start having hearings before commission and council. So this is coming to you, and we just really wanted to make an effort to bring this to the council's attention. And we're here to answer any questions the council may have at this time.
Council, for the public, have any questions? Okay, you want to come up?
Suzanne Johnson, 548 West Herbert. And this is for you, Suzanne, on this. I saw on the news that Los Banos is doing a big tiny home kind of thing for the homeless.
You did.
They got a lot of money from somewhere, and they're going to the state, and they're going to be doing a program that you might be interested in following to see if that.
Thank you.
Because I did see that on the news.
So. Okay, I'll Google that. I'll find out about it. Thank you very much.
Actually, the city of Los Banos got 11 something million dollars, and so did the city of Fresno. But I think the city of Los Banos already knows what they want to do with it. I have not heard what Fresno city is going to do with their money, but it is homeless money from the state. Yes.
Okay.
They're just trying to figure out where to put
it. Yeah. I like to find out where they got that money too, to help it
along.
It
was from the state.
Thank you though. Thank you very much.
Melissa Berry, 468 South Kings Drive. This goes back to those dwelling JADU. How are they permitted, like with electricity boxes, and will that be?
Good question.
Because there are slumlords, and they run electric cords from the Bain house to the other house. That, to me, would be a fire hazard, not only to that dwelling, but to the surrounding neighbors. Mm-hmm. That is my concern, because we have one.
Thank you very much. That's a good question. So when it comes to the construction of JADUs or ADUs, they would have to be built in accordance with today's California building code. So they'd have to meet all of those regulations. They'd have to meet the energy code regulations. So it's a pretty tall order. In fact, we jokingly talk amongst ourselves, just because you can do it doesn't mean you can, because it can be pretty cost prohibitive for some people to be able to comply with the building code standard. So while someone may be permitted to build that, they're going to have to build it with those really strict requirements. And that includes plumbing, electrical, and of course, energy as a whole. And I think on solar, that's frozen till 2025. Okay. I thought there was a moment where it was frozen until next year, but there's also going to be the requirement of having to install solar on those.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So I think it's important to note that people who want to build ADUs have to go through the process with the city as though they were just building a regular house. They have to have engineered plans. They have to have building permits. They have to have electrical inspections, sewer water connections. I don't know if you caught that ADUs now, DIFs, the development impact fees.
It's going to be a bunch of 750 square foot houses.
Ooh.
Can't charge DIFs. And the issue with DIFs is we as a city, and most cities have said, development should pay its own way so that the remaining community isn't picking up the cost of development. Mm-hmm. And so our development impact fees help us upsize sewer lines, upsize water lines, build plants to, accept the additional waste of additional population. We've been getting those development impact fees off these ADUs while they still have an impact on our utility systems. So I don't know if you caught that in the slide, but that's an important thing to understand. The belief in Sacramento is that if you don't charge the DIFs, it will it'll be more cost effective for somebody to build an ADU. They're more likely to build an ADU. And I would argue that DIFs are such a small percentage, that's not what's keeping people from building. So.
Any more comments? Thank you, Ronnie. And it's good to see you, Ellen. I haven't seen you for a while. Moving on to receive information and reports 8, 9, and 10. And you can, if the public has questions, they can call City Hall and ask for during regular business hours. Okay.
May I make a comment on item 8?
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to point out that right now our money that we have invested is making about 5.5% interest versus like zero that it was making a couple of years ago. And that has garnered almost $1 million for us this last year. So it's great.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to council reports.
Councilman Friesen.
This morning I was a part of the legislation announcement by Jim Costa. Got to be here and hear his words and what the plan is for the process that involves with the infectious handling and materials and application permits. So it was a good step forward, and I'm proud of our community and the city of Reedley for initiating this and kind of being a spearhead for the rest of the country in something like this. And also to Jim Costa and his whole team who have put together this legislation and doing something about it. It's easy for somebody to see it and recognize and get a little bit of help, but we are being proactive and taking the next step and pushing this to a larger platform, which I think will kind of pave the way for some regulation and some control over what's going on. And that'll do it for me.
Okay, thank you. Councilwoman Fast.
I was also at the press release this morning, and I'm excited to see that something is being done at the federal level. And I just hope that they leave it up to the local people to actually do the final work of it, because that's where it needs to be. But there needs to be support of our federal officials. Also attended the 80th anniversary of Emmanuel Schools. And at the end, they showed a video of the first graduating class back in 1946, I think it was. And it was very interesting to see all these, well, they're people that are in their 90s now, but they were, you know, from 15 to 18 years old. And it was very interesting. I enjoy history, and that was a history moment for me at the program. So it was a very nice celebration. That's all I have. And I had a great time in Sri Lanka for the last 4 weeks. So it was fun.
Good. Councilwoman Byers?
I have a couple of things. I heard from Carol Dirksen, the president of the Friends of the Reedley Library. And it's been, she was stating, it's been over a year since the final design plans were shared with the public, and that last summer there was a request for proposal, excuse me, where we sent the plans out for bid, but we didn't get any responses. It was very disappointing. And the Friends of the Library didn't hear about it until just a couple months ago. But we do have some good, we got some feedback from some of the design people that would be participating in this, and found out that they said that our budget would not, was too small. They would not be able to build this to our specifications with the type of money that we were offering. That's the county, not the city of Reedley, but the county. So there are some good minds in the county that decided what they could do is to double up. Let's offer them two different projects at the same time. So what right now they're trying to do, and they have something out on, they've already got a request for proposal online. Imagine it's on the county website for the county library system, that they're going to buddy up with the city of Clovis, that also is on mark to have their library updated as well. So if we can offer them two and enlarge that budget that way, I'm hoping that we'll be able to get what we want. So keep your fingers crossed. We haven't heard anything yet. This just went out, I guess, a couple of months ago. So, and I don't remember what the deadline was. I didn't see that. But it was very disappointing to get this type of news, because everybody who's involved in the libraries was very excited about, you know, the input that we were allowed and the changes that were going to be made, where it was going to be. And, you know, this is a source of pride for our community. So it was disappointing to hear this, but very happy to hear that the county came up with a solution. We're hoping that it works and that maybe they might be able to find a little bit more money if they need to. But just keep your fingers crossed, you know, just keep a good thought in your mind for them that this happens. There's, and then just a little aside, the Friends of the Reedley Library are having a used book sale. I think they have them a couple times a year. So they're going to have one coming up this Saturday. It's going to be from 10 a.m. until 2. They said there's going to be great prices. You can bring cash or you can bring cards, your credit card or your debit card. And they've got all kinds of things for all kinds of us. There's CDs, DVDs, children's, young adults, books, lots of different things. So come and support them. This is how they help to support our library by having these book sales. They're used book sales. And if you're interested in donating used books, let the library know and they'll let you know when you can bring them or where you can bring them. But let's support our library. And that's it for me.
Last week, a couple things up in Sacramento. I sit on our Kings River East GSA board, another sub basin a little further to the south of us had a hearing at the State Water Resource Control Board that I spoke about. Ended up talking to some of their staff, a bit represented our GSA as well, and just keeping a good close eye of what's happening there. Anyways, and then move forward. There was a League of Cal Cities event in Sacramento last week as well. It was a local leader, I think, summit or something like that, that I spoke at their reception last Wednesday as well. And a reminder, May 27th, I believe it is Memorial Day. Is our Memorial Day service at the cemetery. Mark your calendars. It'll be 9 a.m. at the cemetery, May 27th, so about a month away. This year, our American Legion leads it. This year, our keynote speaker is the senior pastor at the Big MB Church, Jeff Whelan. He prayed for us last year. This year, he's our lead keynote speaker. He's a combat veteran. As a chaplain, and even on our poster, he asked if he could put a picture on our poster that we're disseminating around town. And so bottom right of the poster is a picture of him and Oliver North when they were abroad. That's all I have, Mayor. Thanks.
Okay, then we'll move on to council reports and then staff reports.
All right. Thank you, Mayor. As a reminder to council, we are moving very, very quickly into budget season, and we like that to be very transparent to the public. We will be rolling out the budget to the public on May 14th. We do this each year. We will start at 6 p.m. instead of 7 p.m. We will have a regular council meeting that starts at 7, but right now it's looking to be very, very light. So as we have done for many years, we'll have each department give a presentation on what is in their budget. And we break that up over several sessions just because the budget is so large. So May 14th, we'll roll out the budget and do the first half of the departmental's budgets, their presentations. And then the second half will be on May 20. I've now forgotten the date of our second council meeting, Paul. Thank you. So that will be the second rollout. The intent is if you have questions, you have concerns, you have things that you want moved around in the budget, if the public has input on the budget, we hear all of that. And then we come back for the first meeting in June with all of the budget documents for adoption. And that way we've incorporated the public's comments and desires, your comments and desires into that the budget document. And you may recall there are several budget documents or several documents for adoption that make up our budget. And so we will have probably 6 to 8 different documents that you'll have to vote upon to have an adopted budget. We always do take that at the first meeting in June. And that way, if there are any changes that we need in those documents, it gives us that second meeting in June to bring them back so that we abide by the statutory timeframe of June 30th to have an adopted budget. Right now, I think that the heavy lifting part is done. We are going to be pleased to present you with a balanced budget on May 14th. We still have some work that we're doing, but it's always crunch time when we're trying to put all that together. So I'll be pleased for us to roll that out to you on May 14th. Do we have, Mary Lou, I was hoping you could give a status on Olson Bridge.
So the Olson project's going well. If you drive by now, you'll see they're right at the bridge. So they're working on the west side or east side, sorry. Big 42-inch pipe going in, but they're still on time and they should be done by the end of May, maybe a little bit sooner, but we'll see. And yeah, it's going well. So thankfully.
Right.
Yeah.
Can I just put on your radar that I got a video and then I end up driving it as well. But South Sunset Avenue, kind of behind that El Pueblo Market, it's super torn up. It's a road I wouldn't even want to drive on between Lincoln and Jefferson, I think. I'd say up to par with, I think it's Hollywood over by Emmanuel. Hollywood. Anyways,
terrible.
Yeah, that's not the only one. Just to be clear, those aren't the only two. There's a lot of them, but just want to put it on your radar when we can at least patch a little bit. These are roads that I wouldn't even want to drive on. Luckily, they're kind of off the main drag roads, but people still do live there and they're driving all the time.
Yeah, and just an update on that. We actually are working right now on an ATP grant that we got to do all the sidewalks and curb ramps in those neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And so once that's done, then I was going to do a road reconstruction, road improvement project. The problem is if we go in and do kind of a heavier maintenance, then that triggers ADA compliance. And so we would negate the grant that we receive. So we're kind of, after that's done, then I was planning on going into that neighborhood. So it is on my radar. So
that's a good strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah. We definitely that. And you brought up Hollywood, Acacia Myrtle, which I've always said are the worst streets in Reedley, but Sunset's pretty bad too.
Yeah.
That we have money for, we have grant funds for, we're designing it. We plan to go out to bid in March for a summer 2025 project because we want to do it when school is out. Superintendent Campbell and I have spoken about that as recent as just today on that project because they're finishing up the Valley ROP building. So he's aware of the time frame on that. So we do know that people want Hollywood, Acacia, and Myrtle repaired, and we are going to do that. There are some really interesting nuances with that street, including sewer and water lines in those streets that need to be replaced. Mm-hmm. But those, along with Sunset and a few others, are definitely on the list.
Oh, good.
So, yeah. Any other staff updates?
Just as a reminder to City Council, let me first say that I am not a big proponent of jeans at work. I've never have been, but tomorrow I am going to close my eyes to it because tomorrow is Denim Day. Denim Day is an opportunity for us to help support and advocate for victims of sexual assault. So tomorrow is the observance of Denim Day 2024. So you'll have several members of our police department wearing jeans tomorrow. Okay. in support of that. So, and then also tomorrow, we have the distinct pleasure of having DA Smitkamp visiting our city. She will be speaking over at Reedley High School on the dangers of fentanyl. Bringing a lot of awareness to our kids. So that that's going to be a really great opportunity. And then next Wednesday starts our community academy. We have 20 applicants or 20 people that have applied and have been accepted into the program. So we will be starting that next Wednesday, and we will be here in this room learning about the police department and how they can be better stewards for our community and just understanding what law enforcement is all about. And that's really the whole reason behind these community academies. And we have about four people that are just Spanish speaking. So we will be accommodating them as well so that the communication is being done to one group at one time so that everyone can hear the same answers and concerns from both sides and not just siloed it because of the language that you speak and stuff. So that is starting next Wednesday, and they will go for 10 weeks with a graduation date scheduled for July 3rd. So just wanted to bring those three items up.
Excuse me. Do you know what time that presentation will be at the high school?
She starts at 8:30 tomorrow.
8:30.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Can I add one more thing? You were talking about veterans, and next Tuesday in Dinuba, they have that Veterans Memorial Wall, and they're doing a dedication there at 10 o'clock. So if anybody is interested, I think I'm going to plan to go. They worked really hard to put that all together, and I think we need to support it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for a couple of the council members who were not on the dais, this city actually did contribute to that wall in Dinuba to show our support for the veterans. So,
So, anybody else? Okay. Have a good evening, and we'll adjourn the meeting.